On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
Two-thirds in. That ball is hit fair between Bloop and the line. Loney will round first and go to second. Here comes Escobar's throw. He's got a good arm on target. Out at second base. Another perfect throw from Eduardo Escobar.
Other than throwing it.
Whoa. To Dozier, that might not be a good idea. Gone. The game is tied. Dozier, a notorious high fastball hitter, and he got one up, and it is fifth home run of the year. Hooked into the corner. Hicks can fly. He'll go to second. He'll go to third. He's rounding third and coming home. Danny Santana on his way to third, and he's in with a stand-up RBI triple.
Who's faster?
Oh, my goodness.
Who's faster, Aaron Hicks or, let's go flavor of the day, Danny Santana?
I'll go Santana.
Al Newman.
I'm going to go Santana. He's a much faster runner.
Danny Santana is so smooth. He is like butter. You are on a bus right now, Al Newman, as you are mobile. Headed toward Owatonna with the St. Paul Saints. Tell us, what are you doing right now?
Hey, I'm reliving the past. You know, bus riding again. I'm headed down, as you just mentioned, to Owatonna with the Saints. We've got a little bit of an exhibition game today, this afternoon. And
you're just going to shake some hands, Al, aren't you?
Are you on staff now?
I'm a guest coach for what's considered the exhibition season.
You're just going to cut guys and leave.
Basically, he brought you in to be the heavy.
Al says you can't play. You got to go.
Hey, it's not my fault. I think you're great, but Newmy says you're out. He's the pro, not me.
Yeah, that window of opportunity is quite small, as we all know, in the game of baseball. And, you know, these guys that are with the Saints are trying to get back in the door, and hopefully something that we do here early in the season can help that happen.
So we've got a lot to talk about today, guys. Obviously, the Twins playing very well at Target Field. That's going to be among the discussion points. And by the way, to everybody here listening on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket, thanks for joining On Deck Radio with David Helmer behind the helm, if you will, and Gene Larkin in studio with yours truly. Al Newman is on his way down to Owatonna, Minnesota with the Saints for a game against, I think he said, some semblance of a town team. Is that who they're playing today?
Yeah, I believe it's a collection of all-stars, different town ball games. You know, the Saints do have some gimmicks that they pull out. And last year there was a nine-inning game played against two different teams, three innings against each. And so this is another opportunity to you know, expose
promote the game of baseball. Yeah.
Saints and a gimmick. No shock there, absolutely.
They should be bringing the Owatonna boys to CHS Stadium. It's a beautiful park.
That would have been nice, but they've got some function.
Kept you off the bus.
At the ballpark, showing it off. You know, it is a beautiful, beautiful facility. I think the fans of not only St. Paul, but all of Minnesota would really enjoy coming to see a game.
So you were there last week, obviously, for the first week of spring training with the Saints. Give us your breakdown, the first words that come to your mind on CHS Field.
Beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous. I honestly believe it would be one of the better minor league facilities. It should allow this ball club to bring in players that are trying to get back in the league, whether it's minor leagues or major league baseball.
That's a great recruiting tool, right, Al? Because, you know, in independent ball, most of those guys have just been released or trying to fight their way back to a professional contract with one of the 30 teams in Major League Baseball. And I'm assuming when those guys get released, there's a number of teams that reach out to them for their ability to play. And if you got a stadium like CHS, it certainly helps the Saints recruit those guys.
Oh, most definitely. And the manager, George Famous, is scurrying the hotlines all the time looking for quality players to put a good product on the field. And with a stadium like this, Gino, just like you just said, it can only help. And, you know, the College Hamlet, I believe, is a partnership in this thing. And if they can't recruit players to a D3 program with a stadium like this, we need to change the staff, I guess.
Explain the Hamlin situation there. What's going on there?
The Hamlin College uses the field for their season, so What a mecca of a complex for them to showcase their talent and to increase their talent.
Yeah, I'm sure the rest of the MIAC teams, as Gene so eloquently noted here from the 105 Ticket Studios, will be jealous of that scenario. But Joe Hamlin's been very, I would say, well organized as far as putting together their recruiting things and the things that they've been working on as far as advertising. They've been marketing. They've been very much on the forefront of building their institution. And this is another great step for them to be able to do that. And, you know, Gene, you know, when you have the big two in St. Thomas, and I'm not undermining anybody else, Bethel or any of those other schools, but when you have St. Thomas and St. John's really out there, their football teams, for instance, are almost like D2, almost hockey, sometimes D1-ish. I mean, they're very, very well put together, those two.
Yeah, I wasn't very familiar with the MIAC Conference guys until my son participated the last 3 years with St. John's. But they've a good brand of baseball and nice stadiums. I mean, we went to CHS this year where St. John's played a doubleheader against Hamlin, and the ball flies out of there a little
it
bit,
does.
Too. It's a good hitter's park.
Does.
I know Kerry Leitenberg, the pitching coach, was complaining to George last week about the wind currents. I said, just keep the ball down, Kerry. Teach him to keep the ball down.
You mean
down.
He doesn't have the fans of the dome? The tell me, guys, was that true back in the day? You know how everybody said they'd turn the fans on and off in the dome?
Please.
Okay, you know what? I'll answer that question.
I love Gene Larkin's reaction. That means yes.
I think they would have showed me a little more love by turning the fans on. If that was legitimate, I would have had more than one career
on that. So who was drawing that up? Was that a local media or a national media deal?
I think
other
we
teams?
Just had so much success playing in that park that they thought of different ways to, you know, it wasn't that we were talented. It was because we were using extraterrestrial
you were helped out.
Features. And which is ridiculous, but
With our payroll, they couldn't figure out how we could win in that building unless we're doing something unscrupulous.
Straight up, do you guys win a World Series if you're at Target Field versus the Dome?
Yeah,
you know what?
Yeah, we win.
I'll go first on that one, Gene. I would say that we were a good defensive team and pitched well. I don't think it was a factor because we were a good ball club, but I would say crowd noise. The intimidation factor for other outfielders coming in, it might have helped, but I don't think it won a World Series for us.
I agree. Let's.
It's a good question. It's a talker. For baseball pundits. And I know people driving around the tangled mess of the Twin Cities right now.
Going to the various
nice construction projects.
Travel team tournaments that you just came from.
Speaking of travel team, I got a question for you. I was talking to your boy Henches. Pete Henches.
Okay.
His kid is playing in Cottage Grove, 11 AAA baseball.
Okay.
They're playing against a team that has a coach firmly entrenched on the bucket of balls. Hardcore calling pitches.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Tell me how bad that is for youth baseball.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to. Everybody who volunteers their time, I have a great deal of respect for. I just believe that when you're going to teach young guys how to play the game, especially a catcher, you have to let him do what he's supposed to do as he grows up. Understand different pitches. I mean, at 11 years old, if he's throwing more than a fastball changeup, I've got a problem with it anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, how he sets up behind the dish, inside, outside corner, how he can communicate with the pitcher, that's something he can learn by playing. It's not something that you should be telling the kid, you call this, call that. Let him make his mistakes at 11 years old. I mean, that's my opinion. I get it, and I respect guys who want to help kids out because they're volunteering their time at this younger level, but I think you learn a lot more as a young man by playing and making your own mistakes and then discussing those mistakes after the fact.
Al, do you think sometimes coaches that do that at the young ages with the kids think they're showing them how to call a game, yet it's really guys' control?
I don't think they're showing them at all. What they're doing is trying to control all phases of the game, and having been a professional, you know, in professional baseball as a manager and coach, the kids who come out of college don't know how to call a game. I've had catchers look at me on the first pitch of the season.
Thank you.
Wondering if I'm going to call a pitch. But more than anything else, those guys that call pitches, they argue with the umpires about balls and strikes, and you can't have it both ways. Just because you're calling the pitch doesn't mean it's got to be a strike. And sometimes I feel the coaches get in the way of the game behind it.
I heard a guy tell me once at the high school level, a pitcher gave up a home run. And the dad blamed the coach for a poor pitch call.
Well, and it's
but that's what this gets to.
It slows the game down. You have the catcher staring at the coach.
Are you going
15?
Chin nose, Bill?
Oh my God! Oh my God! Don't get me started.
How about the wristbands? You know, where the coach yells out 5-13, and then the guy turns and looks at his wristband, and he knows what if it's going to be either a hit run if you're on offense. And
that's when I give it the old eyebrow up, eye roll. I go, here we go. This is going to be a joke.
I have to tell you guys, I'm driving in. I wanted to really talk about this because I knew we'd get Gino just riled, and
because
I love it.
I've been coaching at the youth level forever, and then you see these knuckleheads that try to control these kids. And you had mentioned, are they trying to help them by learning that way? No, they're not. They're just trying to overcoach and let the kids play at that level. I mean, goodness gracious. Try to have them enjoy the game at playing.
To get better at it.
Well, I was talking to Jim Nunn, who's a St. Louis Park High School coach, 200 wins, very smart baseball guy, good guy, knows the game very well. And one of the things we talked about is that kids today don't watch baseball as much as they did back in our day, and so therefore the feel of the game isn't quite as evident.
Totally agree. It's like, you know, when I was a kid, I watched Yankees and Mets daily. We didn't have ESPN back then where you had every game on every night. I picked the cities that I, you know, the team I was rooting for, and I watched every game. And I think you get a feel for the game. And I always tell kids that, you know, you can learn a lot by watching not only professionals, but other kids your age, your peers. And you can learn what to do right and what to do wrong, and then you can implement that in your game. I really believe that.
Oh, most definitely. That's my feel exactly, Gino. I always tell kids, you can talk the game, you can see the game, and most importantly, play the game if you're going to get better. And being told how to react, and you lose those instincts. You lose the instincts of the game. Like, coaches are always controlling everything. But, yes, you can definitely watch and learn via your eyes. On television.
And that's a perfect word, Al, instinct. I think the game lacks instinct, especially at the high school level and below the high school level. Now, you see kids who just can't think out there. They just, they don't have the baseball instinct anymore. It's like everything's been talked to them in a book instead of just go out and playing and reacting to what the game is. Base running especially. So that is one of the things that I think is really lost right now, because you don't watch the game, instinct is lost.
Paying attention, knowing your situations. I see hitters' approaches, and it sounds like we're just Armageddon it, because at quarter to 12, we're going to be bringing in Justin Musil, who's an advisor.
Really? We tried this 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I know. I told him. I told him he's got an 0-2 pitch coming. I even called him on my way here to make sure. But anyway, you know, when we say that there's some very, very, very good baseball players out there as a whole, no question. So before we, you know, this is an Armageddon. No. It's just an overall thing that we've noticed, and I think that everybody here that's dealing with players at various stages of their development that we see. And I think, you know, when you get picked off bases, I saw a game where three guys got picked off yesterday in one game. And I brought that up to one of your players, Gene, one of your Legion players.
Yes.
I said, I turned around and I said, that's three. And you know what Vandy said?
What?
He said, this year? I go, no, today. His jaw hit the ground. But it comes back to paying attention in situations. Al, do you think we spend too much time with players on robotic mechanics? And both of you guys teach, you know, and I know, but I'm sure you can kind of see that sometimes. Do you feel that?
Well, you know, Tom Kelly used to talk about that all the time, about minor league players when they came to the big league. They appeared to be robotic. And I think the reason why they become robotic is because they're being told so much, so fast that they can't think and have those instincts that Gino and I have been talking about. Baseball is a natural game. It's a natural flow. You've got to feel it, not only physically, but mentally, and then go with it. But if you're thinking and not reacting, baseball is a game that makes you look rather stupid on occasion.
You know, one of the ways we can have a segue here to the Twins regarding this conversation, guys, is Aaron Hicks is a guy that comes to mind now. He's a third time up in the big leagues after not having too much success at first. And Mahler is talking about he seems like he's more engaged this time, this stint in the big leagues. He's paying more attention in the dugout. He's playing with more freedom mentally. And I think that goes to what we just talked about. You come up from AAA, you try to improve decompress, you become more robotic, you forget what it is to be just athletic on the field, which he is a tremendous athlete.
Sure.
And I think he's thinking less now and trying to react. Is he hitting good? In a short period of time, he is. We don't know what the big picture is going to look like. But right now, early on in this third stint in the big leagues, he's doing a lot better job as an athlete.
Well, that takes care of question number two in the five questions. So it's going to be four questions. No, we'll get more into that, too. And we got a minute left in this segment. But, Al, it definitely looks like he's a lot more confident and relaxed. And look at what he's doing.
Well, you know, I've been watching the dugout. And every time it pans the dugout, I've kind of looked for Hicks here the last couple of days. And he is engaged with his teammates. And I honestly feel like guys like Torrey Hunter, who have been brought in this year. And, you know, we give Torrey a lot of credit for a lot of different things. But personality of a clubhouse, having been around Torrey for the 7, 8, 9 years I was counting the minor league, he is one that won't let a guy sit by himself, especially a position player. He will be very inclusive. And that pressure in itself helps alleviate and make the guy feel more comfortable. And Aaron Hicks, you know, he is a talent. He's not expected to be a superstar. And I think the last 2 years, we have looked at him as a player that was supposed to blossom and be that star player. First, he's got to get comfortable before his true athletic ability will come out.
We're going to talk about that much more. The Twins playing very well at Target Field. We have some comments from Paul Molitor, all on Deck Radio, coming up right after this.
I think we're seeing steady progress in that direction. I know he's feeling better about how he's throwing the ball. We're all kind of hoping he gets on one of those rolls that we saw last year for the better part of the last 4 months, really. And, I think he's getting closer. I know he's anxious to get back on the mound tonight and hopefully get the homestand off to a good start.
He, of course, was Phil Hughes, who's now 3-4, winners of three straight. Seven innings last night, again, not giving up a lot of runs. Gene on the box score. I don't think did he walk anybody?
Let me look here. He walked one, Wax. 100 Ooh. Pitches, one walk.
Oof.
That's
a tough night for him, Al. But, you know, very important for him to find his. But he hasn't really, he's been pitching well, but then his matchups haven't necessarily been the ones that he saw out of the chute.
You know, and I watched him pitch last year was a terrific year. He had an incredible run pitching for a bad baseball team. And I think, you know, from what you listen to the analyst this year talk about the adjustments he has to make now that his reputation is somebody who throws strikes right from the get-go, first pitch fastballs, and guys starting to tee off a little bit early in the count than they did last year. And I think he's starting to mix in his breaking ball. I mean, even mixing in a changeup once in a while. So I think his repertoire early in the count, where it's supposed to just getting over that first pitch fastball where guys are now trying to hit it, he's made the adjustment to the hitters. Now the hitters are going to have to try to make an adjustment to him in the short term. And I think the proof is in the pudding. The last three starts, he's thrown very, very well. Not a lot of hits. Defense is playing well behind him, just like he was last year.
He walked a lot of guys early in the first month for him,
right,
a lot of guys.
Right.
But now he has hardly walked anybody. Al, obviously, you know, he had the fingernail issue, and we call it the spike curve. Is this a new term? I mean, I never heard of it before.
I couldn't hit the spike curve or the curve.
What? Yeah. I thought a curve was, what's a spike curve? I mean, what is that, Al?
It sounds awfully cute, but, you know, it's just a hard-fighting breaking ball. You know, something that you put a new terminology. It's sort of like the cutter. You know, the
right.
Cutter is just a fastball that moves, and a cutter sounds way more intimidating than a fastball with movement.
Pitching
so,
terminology.
You know, you've got to simplify things, and you're going to see a ball that moves anyway. But getting back to Mr. Hughes, I just think, you know, being that number one starter, you mentioned he went up against some quality opponents that made it tough for him. And, yes, his reputation did precede him when the head coaches have the meetings. They tell the guys, hey, be aggressive early in the count because this guy comes at you. He gets late, then he's got you under control. So he's made the adjustment, as has Pelfrey. And I know I always talk about Pelfrey, but he's the one that got this role started with some quality starts back-to-back. And now that rotation seems to be doing quite well as far as keeping the team in the game.
Okay, so did we hear a Mike Pelfrey endorsement on the phone line here from Al Newman?
Hey, I'm just saying, guys, you know, when they started going well, Pelfrey gave him 7 innings. And then his next start, he gave him 7 innings.
Here's the deal with Pelfrey.
He's a 500 pitcher, but yet he's competitive out there. He's effectively wild.
Here's
I'm
the deal with
he's the number one.
my opinion on Pelfrey is this, Al. I mean, his numbers are really, really good. 3-1 with a 3.29 ERA. I mean, it's tremendous numbers. From a visual perspective, he's kind of the guy that there's always somebody on the staff that drives me keen because it's always a battle. It doesn't seem like he'll throw two innings where he's just rapid fire. Then all of a sudden he gets a guy on first or second base, and then the time between pitches is like extraordinary.
Who's longer here, Nick Black?
I don't know why that occurs. He's a veteran guy. Yeah. I'm really tired of people telling me that he's trying to figure it out. Well, he's been around a long time. And the numbers are good. He's pitched very, very well, and I agree. He's one of the reasons why the positive mojo for the Twins came back, because their starting pitcher became more stabilized, and he's one of the reasons why they become. But when I watch him, I go, okay, where's the shoe going to drop here? Is it going to be the fourth inning, the fifth inning? Is he going to walk two in a row and give up a bomb? There's really no confidence from a fan's perspective, which you're never really sure if he's going to be able to maintain his consistency from the first inning to the seventh inning, if he ever gets to the seventh inning. Where I look at Hughes is a guy, he's an elite pitcher to me. Yeah, Every time you watch him pitch, you get a real good chance of seeing a guy who knows what he's doing on every pitch. He's got a game plan, and he executes the game plan 9 times out of 10. Even when he throws a bad pitch, he comes back with a stellar pitch to keep the hitter up bounds. Well, where Pelfrey's a guy like, oh my God, where did that pitch come from? That was 50
foot. I hear everything you're saying, and you and I both know as hitters and bench type players that we would be the type of guy that would have the face of Pelfrey.
Exactly.
You know, the starters, you know, they take that day off because it is a tough at bat, just because you never know. You think he's hittable, but he's all over the place. And that, when you're playing in a three game series, there's always that one guy in the rotation that can put a team in a slump.
Right.
And by that, I mean he's just so all over the place that the next day's pitcher is going to reap some rewards because of his lack of consistency and strike zone.
Right. I mean, I just wish he would start to trust. I mean, they always say he needs to trust his stuff. Well, when is that? Just trust it. Go out there and throw your pitches. You got a good repertoire of pitches. You throw the ball hard. You're a big, imposing figure on the mound. So just go out and trust it and see what happens, because the lack of trust is killing him for his whole career.
Well, and so the interesting part is right now at this stage, he's about as healthy as he's been since he's been here. At least it's so it appears. So that part of the aspect is taken away. Now it's funny, we're talking about a pitcher who's 3-1. There's been some great performances. I mean, it's a very up and down situation. The thing on the body language that intrigues me from Gene's perspective is, if I'm hitting against that, and I never obviously played anywhere close to that level, I'd be excited to see that. I'm going to jump all over that. I mean, doesn't that send a message to the hitter?
And you're 0-for-4 at the end of the day. You know, what I mean is not that effective, but that tempo throws off the hitter's tempo on occasion. And yes, you never know what you're going to get. I just always like to say this, that when we expected less from him, he gave us more.
Correct.
And that sort of changed the karma when he touched the mound for the team.
Yeah, I think you're going to get what you're going to get from Pelfrey. And like I said, the numbers are fantastic. I'm not criticizing what he's done this year. I'm just kind of baffled.
You want more.
I'm baffled by when I watch him play. You mentioned the body line. I'm baffled by that. A guy with a number of years in the big leagues, and I understand he's coming off arm injury, but just go out there and throw the baseball like you're capable of, and then, you know, let the chips fly.
You want more. Is what you're saying, and I think it's fair to expect more. This guy is, like you say, he's a specimen. When he is on, and all you're saying is, you know what? You've been around for a long time, 31-year-old player. You have the ability to deliver here.
And if you're going
to
be a fourth or fifth starter, that's probably what you're going to get, inconsistency. But I say, to me, he's better than a 4 or 5. He should be better than a 4 or 5 guy with his stuff. That's what really what I'm saying.
It's interesting. We seem to get on his topic just about every show for some reason. Why is that?
I wish I was 6'5", 240, be able to throw the ball like that.
Al, don't you? Mm-hmm. You there?
I'll quit.
Oh, we lost him. I'll have to call him.
He got tired of the Pelfrey discussion.
He ran out of juice.
On to the next topic. If you Dave could pick up cut two on Target Field, and you know, coming off a road trip where they're 500, a pregame comment from Paul Molitor.
You know, you hope that trend continues. Obviously, we have talked about, you know, part of turning our fortunes around will probably start in our home park, where we haven't played well over the past 4 years. So, it's a short sample size what we've done here so far, but obviously the guys seem to be playing very confidently in this park. And although it's a short hope stand, we got to have to recover from the loss the other day, turn the page, and hopefully come out tonight and have a good night.
Well, they turned it. They were behind. They were down 2-1. They came back. The big Dozier fly there. And Aaron Hicks is, I'm telling you, I think it's great because.
You love Hicksy now, don't
well,
you?
Well, he was put out to
You're
pasture.
The biggest front runner
no,
I've ever
no,
been
No,
around.
No.
Holy cow.
My thing with him was I found it very confusing. And I found it very interesting with him as a player. You know, again, I get kind of stuck into this deal. I've never seen him play up until the sample sizes we've seen here.
Sure.
But you hear from all of these national publications who've never seen him play. They get secondhand information. Maybe he was great at this level. Maybe he wasn't. And then all the pundits around this town, you know, have it all figured out that he's the second coming, but he hasn't done anything yet. And so it's hard to
Here's the thing, when I watch him, okay, he's a terrific athlete. He really has got a good throwing arm. He runs very, very well. He's got a, you know, the physique is nice. He never really had any tough situations growing up. He was a number one pick. He went through the system. And then when he had that failure, he had a tough time dealing with that failure. It just telling Gardy that, you know, he doesn't want to be a switch hitter last year.
That's bizarre.
That's bizarre. But it's not bizarre when you think about his mentality that he never had any failure as an athlete. He was always there. His athletic abilities could overtake his mental deficiencies. Well, in the big leagues, it's very, very difficult for that to happen. And it ganged busted on him a little bit and, you know, two stints back down in AAA.
Do you think it's okay to tell a coach you don't want to switch hit?
That wasn't the right time. I think everybody knew he was struggling from the left side of the plate. You just don't go up to the man and say, I quit. I don't want to do this.
Not
in the big leagues. You can't do that in the big leagues.
Let your performance quit for
what's
you.
The next thing, well, the manager really, mentally, you're done. If a player says to a coach, mentally, I'm done, well, he's not going to play you in the big leagues anymore. He's going to ship you down, which they did, which they should have did. When you lose someone mentally as a player, as the you give the coach or manager no alternative.
I'm here rooting for him.
Because
there's been such a. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. If you worry about outfield defense, you don't have to anymore over there. And Eduardo Escobar now should be on the All-Star ballot as a left fielder. We have five questions coming up on Deck Radio right after this. Welcome back to On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket, along with Gene Larkin in studio, Al Newman on the bus, reliving the minor league days as he's with the St. Paul Saints as they travel to Owatonna for an exhibition game. Sounds to us like he's doing the dirty work for manager George Samus, taking the hits for the cuts.
This is a tough time for a manager when you're trying to evaluate your starters and the guys you're going to, you know, put in your rotation, and then you're going to tell a few guys you're not in our plans. Very tough week.
Very tough week, and you mentioned the word rotation. Time for five questions. I got a good one for you here.
Let's hope.
I was all fired up this week, wasn't I?
Send me possible questions during the week.
I think it was after that 13-1 route, whatever it was. So that was the Mike Palfrey start that didn't work too well that we talked a little bit about. But Tommy Malone sent down, and I don't understand. I'm not the guy that makes the decisions. And you know, there's always something more to what goes on. But he's in AAA. He's had two starts. He's 2-0. He's struck out 20.
He's dominated.
Yeah. He's walked none. 20 of his 42 outs have been strikeouts. So he's proven, get me out of here. I am too good for this level. Why is he not here?
Well, I think, number one, he did exactly what he's supposed to do. He's a professional pitcher who was sent down for, you had mentioned, it could be a number of reasons. Numbers is probably the main reason, and he went out there and just dominated the AAA. And he's better than the AAA pitcher. I think that's pretty obvious. Where he fits in the Twins rotation right now really depends on a number of things, the health of a certain guys. Do you want to bring him up and have a lefty in the rotation? I do. I always felt as a hitter, I want, you know, I always love the fact that if I face three righties in a row or three lefties in a row, it's a little bit easier than two righties and then throw that lefty in there on a Sunday specifically. But, yeah, he's done exactly what he's supposed to do. We talk about Pelfrey. We talked about Trevor May now. He goes today. He's scuffling a little bit.
Yep.
But he's a young guy. Do you pull him out right now and the rotation's becoming stabilized? But, you know, Tommy Malone has indicated to Terry Ryan that, you know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do in AAA, try to get me back up there ASAP.
Al?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on that one. He's done what the organization is asking to do, take the reassignment, go down there and produce, and he has done that. And then you come back to the front office side of things, and you go, well, I've got three guys under big-time contracts. You know, we've got the one candidate probably is May, because Gibson has established himself, I think, in a year and a month here in the big league, that he belongs up here. So you're really looking at one guy, you know, besides salary. You're only looking at one guy. So I think something, an adjustment will be made. No way do I think they'll go to a six-man rotation. But it's one of those things, you don't hope somebody fails, but if Mr. May has a tough time, you may see Mr. Malone back up here.
Here's the question of the day if you're a general manager. If your young guy May gets more consistency, if Pelfrey pitches like he can, and Malone continues to pitch well in AAA, and Nolasco is that guy who just he can't get it together for whatever reason. He's making a lot of money. Do you have the guts to put him in the pen?
Oof.
That's a tough call.
You know, the thing is, you put him in the pen, Gene, when do you use him?
Correct.
Yeah, look at the pen.
He doesn't seem like the type of guy that would go to the pen and like say, oh, sure, for the good of the team. He's not the type of personality. Yeah. The way I watch him on TV, he's never really happy. It seems like he's always, you know, a little ticked off about something. I mean, he was taken
out
of the
game.
Didn't it
look like that in Detroit?
Taken out of the game in Detroit. I was like, oh, my God, really? So we'll see. We'll see. Exactly.
Well, it doesn't help when our producers at FSN keep taking shots. Don't you love that when a guy boots a ball and he's just standing there getting ready? Like, they kept showing Dozier over and over. Well,
but
what's he supposed to look like?
You know what, from a drama, it's a good problem to have when you've got a guy or two in AAA who are dominating AAA so that if there's an injury or a poor performance, consistent poor performance over the next few weeks, you have a guy like Malone to come up and fill that void.
Okay, guys, question number two. We'll start with you, Al. The incredible run that Big Red is on. Fear the Beard has found its way to the Twin Cities. That thing is growing like a chia pet. We're talking about Blaine Boyer. What is it, 15 straight he's knocked down, and what is it, like 7 or 8 appearances? He's been lights out after a tough start. Very humble guy, crediting it to a couple adjustments in his delivery. Al, is this going to last with him?
Well, you know, I think probably from the beginning of the season has shown that he's willing to give him the ball, and he's taken it and done what a pitching coach and a manager would love for you to do, go out there and earn your keep. You know, with an ERA of 2.50 right now, I'd say he's a guy that I would trust in the 6th, 7th inning and possibly the 8th. Yeah. And the fact that he's come in and gotten out of jams has only helped his case. So I'm going to say it's going to continue because I'm counting on that bullpen to come together. And as I wrote down on my radio sheet, you know, Paulie's putting guys in positions that they know that they're going into. They all know their roles now, and I think it's made for a comfort level for Mr. Boyer.
He also fields his position really well, Gene. He's taken that 8th.
Good athlete, Wax.
Good athlete.
As Bert would say, pitchers are the best athletes.
Unless you're CC Sabathia, who pitches better fat. But anyway, we've established that. But the fact of the matter is he not only fields his position, he's made some great plays, but he's filled in that 8th inning slot for the injured Casey Fien quite well.
Yeah, and what Al mentioned the fact that he made adjustments from a poor start. He had a great spring training. First week of the season, he was terrible. He wasn't throwing strikes. And now I think with those adjustments, he's throwing a lot more strikes, putting the ball in play. And if you're going to have the ball in the 8th inning, you can't be walking people. So I think he's gained the confidence of not only his teammates, but the manager and the pitching coach. And he's going to get that ball as long as he continues to do the job.
So that lands.
Hey, you know what he reminds me of? Excuse me, I didn't mean to cut in, but remember Carl Willett?
Sure. Now the pitching coach for the Red Sox.
Pitching coach for the Red Sox. He has to go finish and stick those 3-4 fingers in his mouth before he throws every pitch.
Are you giving Carl's secret away, Noomi? Are you giving that secret away on air?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the worst kept secret?
I think Mr. Boyer, I'm not saying it's illegal, but he's getting some movement on the ball, and it's all legal because now you can do that stuff on the mound as long as it looks like you wipe it off.
Oh, so you feign that, correct? So can we go to replay?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. So the next question just jumps straight from that. He was incredibly complimentary to the manager, Paul Molitor, about patience with him. And Molitor has been on record as saying, you know, he had such a great spring, there's no reason to believe why that wouldn't work there. But he also said that after that rough start, he talked about the manager and how he's a pro. He is completely respected by this team. And I think the things that Blaine Boyer said after that really were testimonial to the belief this team has in the manager. We talk about him a lot because let's face it, it's a big part of the game. Al, we'll start with you. Each week, I'm even more impressed with Paul Molitor's demeanor, the way he handles the umpires, to his decisions, to how he's been managing the bullpen and everything. Your impression almost at the one quarter mark of the season on what Paul Molitor's done.
I honestly believe that Paul Molitor is in total control of his ball team. He is the pulse of that team. He's got some nice guys. He's got Torrey Hunter. He's got a staff that he's put together that he trusts. And I think that helps the comfort level of the ball club because Molly's demeanor, when that camera hits him, his demeanor has changed.
No.
In panic situations, when you get a chance to see the dugout, Paulie's not pacing back and forth. He's out there. He's just watching the game, confident that the proper things will take place between the lines. So I think Paulie has put a patent on this team in the sense that, hey, be patient. It'll come back our way. Let's just continue to do what we work at and have success.
He seems like he's very calm at every position of the game, Al. I think in the beginning of the year, he mentioned that so many things were going through his mind.
Yes,
he was probably outthinking himself a little bit.
He even said that.
And, you know, the first week we've talked about it was a travesty as far as the performance on that field. But he never panicked. In the papers, in the clubhouse, you could tell from what the players said after that Fiddler's going to continue to play and grind it out. And he just looks really, really calm when the camera goes on him, that he's got everything under control. He's got the players in the positions that he wants them to play. He's letting the young guys succeed and fail. And I would say the other word, calm, and he's an encourager. He really encourages the players. Exactly.
You know who he reminds me of? Is a more scaled down version of Mike Socha, minus the writing surface and the notes.
Really?
You know how he sits there, you know? He looks like he's sort of a sales manager behind the desk. I mean, seriously. And Mike Socha has always seemed to be in control of the situation and not very...
He reminds me of TK a little bit.
Yeah.
Very calm in the dugout. TK never really argued with the umpires. He rarely got thrown out of the game.
That's who I thought of. I thought of Tom Kelly, you know. Yeah. Especially, you know, I'm not going to say a young Tom Kelly, but he was 36 when we played with him in 87. And at that age, Tom had the ability to calm his team or to stay under control. Gino just alluded to, rarely if ever got thrown out. And I recall one time he got thrown out was because of me. They called me out at first base, and he knew it was something that transpired from the day before. And so Rocky Road talked him out of the game. But, you know, TK says, they're not going to change the call. And we have to make the adjustment and not get overhyped about different calls.
Final question for you guys. You're both switch hitters. We're going to talk about switch hitting next week because I find it fascinating. Who was, for you, Gene Larkin, in Major League Baseball, the toughest righty that you faced?
Oh, I had two. From a starting perspective, Roger Clemens. From a relief pitcher, Brian Harvey of the old Angels.
Oh, wow.
He was tough with the splitty. So that was those two guys from the starting and relieving.
How about you, Al?
Well, I have to go with Dwight Gooden.
The Doc.
When I was in the National League my first 2 years. And as far as relievers are concerned, I was always pinched hit for. I got pinched hit for when it got to be that time, so I really don't have any of those guys.
You know what, man? We need you in studio. You got to get in here, man.
I'll be in there next week.
All right. Are you going to stick for this last segment with Justin Musil? We're talking high school prospects. Can you, or do you need to bounce?
Well, you know what? They're starting to get a little loud on this bus.
Okay.
So I'm going to dial out here, but I just want to say to the people out there, I enjoy the team because right now As we called for early in the season, we wanted 500, and we're at that stage.
And over at this point. Al, good luck today down there. We'll see you in studio next week.
All right, guys.
Al Newman in Owatonna, Minnesota with the St. Paul Saints. Justin Musil from Elite Sports Advising coming up on our next segment. We're going to be talking some serious prospects in the high school baseball world in the state of Minnesota. This is On Deck Radio. More right after this. Gene Larkin going full Steve Perry in the microphone, going karaoke right
this
here.
This is always the last segment music.
Well, you know why this is.
Very good.
What are they? 20-16.
Yeah.
They were at one juncture going into Detroit 5-0.
Grind it out.
You know what? You're a quarter of the way almost into this season, and
I'm happy.
I mean, this team was in this spot last year.
They're a fun team to watch. Could we have
Thank
said
you for
that the last few years?
No.
They're a fun team to watch. I like the way Paul manages the team, that they work hard, they give you an effort, max effort, 1 through 9 innings. That's something as a fan you just want to see more of, and then the younger guys will get better with more experience, the older guys will help them along, and right now they're in a good spot. I like the direction the team is going right now.
This will sound ridiculous, but there's nothing better than the half full, because you can spread out if you're a fan.
Sure.
It's awesome. What,
sure.
It's the greatest. A buddy of mine went on a first date on Friday night. Andrew Nealand, if you're listening, I hope it went well.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, well, he's like 30, whatever.
Oh, my goodness.
So, but you know what he said?
What did he say?
I'm not getting paid by the Twins to do this, by the way. I can't think of a better place. This
first date?
His gal
Target
was from
Field?
Los Angeles, California. He said, I can't.
Chavez Ravine versus Target Field.
Let me think. So he couldn't think of a better place to just to
break
to
the ice.
Enjoy the Minnesota.
Is he an extrovert
situation.
Or an introvert?
I don't know. I wouldn't bank on anything with that one. Great
What's
guy.
A sign?
He's a model who can't talk. I'm just kidding. He's probably listening. No, he's a great guy. Justin Musil.
This went to a different direction.
Speaking of Justin Musil, how are you, buddy?
Hello. Hey, how are you doing, man?
Good. How about you? We were going off the rails there for a minute.
Oh, my gosh. You guys are having a good time there today.
Absolutely.
Well, throwing your buddy under the bus, man.
Yeah, he probably got run over a couple times forward and back on that one. So you of course, work in sport advising with a lot of baseball players in this area, so you see a ton of high school baseball games. And, you know, one of the things that you and I spoke about a little bit off the air this morning was, you know, we got into kind of the level of play that we're seeing, and I'm seeing a lot of great high-end players right now in the state.
Yeah.
I don't think people know as much about that as it really is. Can you touch on that notion a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, the level of talent right now in the state of Minnesota is just really strong. I've actually talked to some pro scouts, some big-time college guys that have been in here, looking at some guys, and I think it's across the board. People are kind of saying that the 15 class was good. The 16 class is as good as we've had in, you know, five to 8 years probably. So, and then the 17 class is really strong too. So it's on the way up, I think, here. And I mean, the firsthand too, but, you know, I'm all over, so it's across the state, which is awesome.
Are they saying, are these guys, excuse me for jumping in, are these coaches and scouts saying what it is that they're liking about these players that's standing out for them?
Yeah, it's not, you know, we've had the high-end guys here, you know, every year, and that's kind of standard, but I think the depth, I keep hearing that again and again, is, wow, there's tons of middle infield depth, there's tons of arms, there's tons of outfielders, you know, it's like the talent from at the top end is now stretching to where, I mean, I think we could have, in the 16 class, I think we could have 30 to 35 Division I guys playing right now. So, and that's a very, very strong class.
Well, Justin, here's the situation with me. You know, I coach at the Adana Legion level.
Absolutely, man.
And part of our jobs, and I know what you're doing is an elite sport advisor, is trying to help not only kids, but try to communicate to parents the framework that their kid is going to be involved with over the next year or two if they're a junior or a sophomore when they go out to various schools. What is your hardest job to communicate to the parents? Because when I talk to people, it's like, okay, do you think my kid is a Division I player? I'm assuming you get that question all the time.
Yeah.
You laugh.
Great question. I think the most difficult thing for us as advisors, and the thing that I get a lot is I'm not always sold that even though a kid is a Division I talent, that that's the best fit for them. And, Gino, as you know, I mean, playing.
I love that comment. Thank you very much, Justin.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, it's just, it's a grind. You know, there's a different sort of dedication. There's a different level of expectation. Of course, at all levels in college, you're an elite baseball player. It's very demanding everywhere. But as you climb up, it's just a different grind and a different expectation. And so for me and for our guys, we're always preaching to kids to be open to schools, visit schools. And you know, as you know, Gene, it's crucial to find coaches too that you mesh with, that you fit with. You're going to thrive under certain coaches, and you're not going to thrive under other coaches. And so we try to get kids to visit schools, be open, try to feel, you know, get a feel for the coaches. We know the coaches well, so we can give some insight. But you know, it's very common where kids just think, well, Division I, that's just what I'm going to do because that's how good I am. Well, I tell them to go watch like a Mankato State or a St. Cloud State sometime and tell me those guys couldn't play Division I baseball. I mean, they absolutely can.
Depends. See if I could jump in on that. You have three Division II schools you can throw a hula hoop around with St. Cloud, Mankato, and Concordia St. Paul, which are great options for that. For the player that goes to college to play, whether it's D1, 2, or 3, you told something to me that I thought was a very interesting concept. What you do is you like to find a bottom end baseline and say, okay, your son at worst is this, and then we'll go from there. Can you explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, well, we don't like putting labels on guys because I think it's really unfair. I mean, our job is to help figure out what level that they might be able to play at from a projectability standpoint, which we talk about all the time. But yeah, I think for us, we don't want to pigeonhole a kid. So if we say, hey, you're a Division I guy, yeah, I mean, we believe that if we're saying that. We rarely throw that around, but we want to give a range. So our bottom end, though, would be, hey, you're going to be a good Division III player at worst, and you are better than the large majority of players. So, I mean, it's very difficult to be successful at the Division III level at a good program as well. And so we're trying to give the kids a really good assessment on all of those levels. But yeah, I mean, I think that's key, Pete.
You know, one of the things I always tell kids too, Justin, you might agree or disagree when someone says, is this a fit? I said, well, you have an opportunity here to put a Division I uniform on, but you might not play until you're a junior or a senior. But if you go Division III or II, you're probably going to have a very good chance to play as a freshman. Now, what's more important to you, playing at an earlier age as a freshman or a sophomore, or having to wait until possibly your junior or senior year? And they might even redshirt you, so you'll be there 5 years. So I always talk to kids about that. Is that the direction you want to go?
Yeah, that's a great point, too. I could talk about that for hours, actually, just because you can, when you're looking at those schools, I mean, if any kid that is an elite baseball player, when they go to the next level, it is very difficult to sit on the bench. I mean, they've never done it. And so they've never been tested with that. And so to think that, oh, yeah, this is what I want, but I'm gonna be able to sit for 2 years, well, it's really a wild card because they don't know. They don't know how they're going to handle that. So I try to push the kids, really strongly considering that. And if that's the case, then, you know, thinking about going different directions and trying to get somewhere where they have an opportunity quicker. I mean, that's just, if your college career at the end of the day is sitting on the bench, that's not a great experience. So for me, it's trying to get kids into spots where they can have a great college experience, whatever level that is.
Well, let's be honest. We got a minute left here. It'll be quick. It's not about the scholarships because you're getting your books paid for maybe a year if you're lucky. Two, if you hit the jackpot. So you go to college to play baseball because you love the game, right?
Yeah, right on. I mean, that's a little bit of a misperception because there is money. I mean, we had a guy this week that got a full ride offer basically out of an SEC school. So there's money, but it's just that's not what we preach because it's like that should be secondary. It's about the love. It's about finding the right fit.
Find the right academic fit as well for the young man.
Yes, key, man.
Because that's what it's about. I owed you because now everybody thinks they can go to the SEC. Good luck to you with that. All right, Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
To you soon. Take care. Gene, great show.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. That's going to do it. David Helmer, thanks a lot for great work once again today on Deck Radio. I'm Pete Wagner. So long, everybody.